So hello, welcome to our Friday chat and chuckle. Yes, I see it on Facebook now. So you know me and Joanna, and our guest this month is T.
Hi,
I'll let
T.
T introduce themselves, but we're going to be talking about fearful cats today. So if you are watching and you have any questions, if you have a fearful cat at home, if you are a dog trainer and you want to know how to work with fearful cats, if you are a cat behavior consultant, whatever, a veterinary professional, and you think you have a question about fearful cats, let us know and one of us will answer. So go ahead and introduce yourself, T.
All right. My name is T. Hamboyan Harrison. I am a certified cat behavior consultant. I have certifications through International Association of Animal Behavior Consultants as a CCBC, and I am also a fear-free certified animal trainer. I've been doing this professionally since the beginning of 2022, which seems like forever ago. I have always had a special interest in fearful cats. I used to volunteer with a rescue as a cat cuddler, and I always gravitated towards the ones that were terrified and hiding and trying to. It was probably the most rewarding part of that volunteer job for me was seeing those cats start relaxing and coming out of their shells and learning that they didn't have to be terrified of people. So that was kind of how I started, really, with fearful cats in particular.
Great. So Joe's going to be monitoring to see if the Facebook land has any questions. It looks like we have about five viewers right now. So I'll start off with well, let's start out with talking about cats in shelters, because there are fearful cats in shelters, there are fearful cats in homes, and I know we have people that work with both sides. So, I guess what are some ways that shelters, if you're a volunteer at a shelter, or if you're working at a shelter and you notice that they have an issue with a lot of fearful cats, they're not getting adopted, they're not getting what they need, what are some, I guess, some baseline things to start with that we can do for fearful cats?
I think that was a great question because it's one of the biggest challenges that shelters have, I think, is trying to get cats that are hiding and terrified to show better to potential adopters. One of the first things I usually do is I usually try to look at the information first of all and try to get an idea, okay, was this cat a stray? Did they come from a home? So that's information that you can usually access before you even start interacting with the cat. But usually the first thing I do is check out the cage space, see where the cat is in the cage, if I can see the cat at all. Some cages and some shelters don't always provide a hiding spot for cats, and I think that's an overlooked thing that is really easy for shelters to do, and generally pretty inexpensive. I mean, you can even do just cardboard boxes. You can drape a towel over the cage door, just something to give them the choice about if they can't, if they want to hide, they can, and if they don't want to hide, they won't. But the first thing to do is really just kind of assess where they are in the cage and see if they want any interaction. It can be hard in shelters because the staff there are always overwhelmed. There's always way too much to do and not enough time. And even the most dedicated shelters and the most dedicated staff members, they only get a few minutes maybe a day with each animal at best, which is not a lot of time. As a volunteer, it can fill a really crucial role of trying to spend more time with especially the scared cats. If you have 30 seconds, to clean a cage and put down food and water, that's not going to be enough time for this cat to learn they don't have to be afraid. One of the things that I like to do when I volunteer at a shelter is if I usually ask the staff, who would you like me to check out today? And a lot of times the cats that I see struggling the most, they'll hiss when anyone approaches the cage. And the first thing I like to do is if a cat hisses at me, especially if the cat's in a cage and can't go anywhere, I stop and I take a step back and I wait.
So easy, right?
I give the
But people
cat
don't think
time.
about it.
Because hissing, people sometimes mistake. I'm not gonna say sometimes, because this was an error that I used to make too. That hissing's an aggressive thing. The cat's hissing at you. It wants to attack you, or it's mean. It's the cat saying, "Hey, I want some space. You're not giving me enough space. I'm not comfortable with how close you are." So I think one of the easiest things to do is if a cat hisses, especially in a shelter environment, take a step back. Just take a step back and don't move. Just wait. Take that 30 seconds. And then usually what I try to do is take a half step forward. If the cat's looking at me, I'll offer them some slow blinks. Take a small step forward and see if the cat doesn't hiss, I'll just stay there for a minute and then I'll try to take another small step forward. If the cat does hiss, I stop and I take a step back. And the cat, learns that, hey, I don't need to be quite as afraid of this person because they're doing what I'm asking them to do. There's a communication happening here. On the other hand, there can be cats in shelters, and I've seen this kind of more frequently with like senior cats that are surrendered, for instance. And they kind of just curl up in the carrier and don't want to leave. Don't want to come out, they're really shut down. And this is where it's important to like know the background if you can in a shelter environment. If it's a senior cat and I know they've come from a home environment, I'll take a really soft brush, and just kind of offer them the brush and see if they'll allow me to stroke their head a couple times. Watching, of course, very closely for pupil dilation, and if the cat hisses, back up. if the cat hisses, pupil dilation, their whiskers go back, their ears flatten, the fur goes up. Anything that gives me the sign this cat is really, I'm making things worse, not better. I'd back off. But sometimes knowing where the cat comes from, some of those senior cats that are just shut down need a person to take the first step and offer affection. But it's important to know background. I did make a mistake once of thinking a cat was friendly and shut down and petted the cat in a carrier, thinking it was friendly and shut down, and shared that with a staff member later, and they were like, "You touched who?" And found and then learned the next time I was there that that cat was extremely feral and was just shut down. So it is important to know kind of the background if possible, which.
I want to circle back to something that you started talking about right at the very beginning when you started talking. And we were you were talking about providing cats with in shelters, kind of in shelter cages with hiding spots. And I find that can be sometimes a pretty hard conversation with shelters because they are like, but we want them to be visible because otherwise how else will they not going to get adopted? Do you have any tips on how to approach that conversation with them?
It really, some of this would depend on the shelter environment, but there are ways you can offer the cats a hiding spot and they'd still be somewhat visible if you really wanted to, like have the cardboard box kind of slanted so that someone can still see inside. But the real thing is that if a cat's terrified and they have no place to hide, they're going to be hiding in the litter box, which is not, they're not going to show well hiding in a litter box. And hiding in a litter box also makes it harder for staff to clean because the cat's in the litter box. So it really, just offering them a place to hide, so that they have the opportunity to come out of their shell a little bit, it will actually help them become more adoptable because they'll be less scared.
That's good points, because I feel this is kind of usually the argument, but shelters do offer, and they say, yeah, sure, nice, cute, but right. So we have a first question on our face under our blah blah on our Facebook feed in the comments. CT, I'm even more stressed. So the question is, I have a 5 month old feral rescue. She is hissing at guests in my house. She comes for attention from guests, then hisses when she gets very close to them. She has hiding and high spots to passively interact. Our home is quiet and extremely cat friendly. Any suggestions for guests?
My suggestion would be that guests should be instructed that the cat does not exist, and they should completely ignore her and pretend that she is not there. She is invisible. She is a ghost. And it's just like when you hear the joke that, like, if you have a party and there's a cat there, the cat will gravitate towards the person that hates cats or the person who's allergic to cats. That's a real thing. Cats are attracted to people that don't pay attention to them. So I think the harder that the guest tries, the more, of this undesirable behavior that you'll probably see. I think it's less is more. Something that you could do is, I wouldn't even have the guest do toys or treats. I wouldn't do that. I would have you do it, someone she does trust, and just if she's around and she's hanging out and she's, behaving herself, just toss her some treats or play with the toy a little bit, just to create a positive association with that person without forcing her to be close to that person if she doesn't want to. That's my two cents. You can jump
Yeah,
in.
I think there's a couple interesting parts of that question. And I do think Laura's main suggestion of having telling people to ignore the cat and pretend the cat's not there is the right one too. There are I have at least two former feral cats in my house. And one who may or may not have been. We don't know his history, but he's very friendly now. But one thing that I've found a little bit helpful is when guests come into my house for the first time, my cats are not used to guests. I'll just get that out of the way because we don't have a lot of guests come over. But when they come over, I tell them not to knock on the door because that sends them flying.
I have a sign on my door that says, don't knock, and it's for
Yeah,
me.
it's, if somebody knocks, they hide the whole time. If they see me open the door, me go up the door and let someone in without knocking, it goes easier. I also usually have them sitting down and being quiet if possible. And if, especially if the cat starts approaching and is acting interested, to have the person not move, and be quiet and seated. I've found there's a big difference with my cats, at least, depending on if somebody's seated or standing in terms of how threatening that can seem. It's also important to remember that a formal or a former feral cat being outside, if they were outside, things that are larger could be something that's going to hunt them. So it's important to kind of let your guests know, hey, this cat, doesn't know necessarily that you have good intentions. Hi, Sunny.
Sunny's here. Officially open.
One other thing that I've been doing recently that's been very effective for my own super anxious former feral Inigo. Inigo's been getting a pattern game every morning, the up down pattern game, which is super easy. There's a dish. Just go through it really fast. There's a dish. I put a treat in the dish. He looks up at me. He gets another treat, and we repeat that process for 10 treats or so, and then it ends. We have a friend who's been coming over pretty regularly, and Inigo was a little curious about her, but not sure. And what I did is I got out his dish and I got out his treats and I started the pattern game with him. And I actually was able to pass the treats to her in the middle of the pattern game. She was sitting next to me. And she started the pattern game with him. And since then, you know, she's his favorite person outside of me. So,
you know how to play this game too. Yay!
Yeah. Yeah. So that sometimes can work too, but yeah, it can be a long haul with a cat that's 5 months old already and used to be feral, but as long as your guests respect your cat's space.
Yeah. And so I brought my cat Lennox in when he was between 3 and 4 months and he was completely feral. And honestly, like, he doesn't interact with guests. He might come up to them and sniff them, but he runs away. But he's, you know, he loves me. And I think that's fine. I mean, I think in some cases, like, I often feel very special that I'm the only person that my cat likes. But for him, like, I did his socialization very, very unconventionally, where I did do very, very hands off. It's all his choice to interact. I just kind of let him go and do his thing. And I mean, he's a cat now who was raised being taught that he never had to interact if he didn't want to. He always had a choice. He could always opt out. He could always say no. And I think that's made him so much more confident in his interactions, because I don't think he's scared of people. He'll come out and hang out in the same room when there's guests over, but he's just like, I would prefer it if you didn't touch me or interact with me. And that's, you know, that's his choice. So,
and I think this is, yeah, and I think this is something that kind of, just like you said, teaching or talking to your guests and telling them, pretend you don't like cats or pretend the cat is not there. Because very often what happens, both with cats and dogs, right? They're just naturally curious and they want to check you out. I mean, you're in their space. They want to know who you are. But then we mistake this approach for an invitation to interact and an invitation to get physical, right? So, and then, you know, and then they go like, whoa, that's not what I wanted. That's not what I meant. And that's when the either hissing or growling in case of the dogs or happens. So I think the more predictable your guests are going to be, as in we do not reach out towards the cat with our hands, the more confident your kitty's going to be also around people, because he's going to know what to expect.
I always tell my clients that it's like the cat stuck out his hand for a handshake and you gave him a big hug and a kiss.
Yeah.
So that's what they're coming from.
Yeah, exactly. And then, and it's, hey, it's fair, but I've done that to some people during the conference because everyone was hugging. Mm-hmm. And I was like,
mm-hmm.
Hold, nobody hissed at me. But the other thing that I wanted to say, kind of when it comes to treats and you know, pattern games are fun, foraging toys are pretty fun if your cat is still getting used to being in the same space as other people. A little snuffle mat or other foraging toys might be something that they might enjoy in the same space but kind of away from people. It activates the seeking system. It lowers anxiety and it just makes, like, kind of creates a nice experience where they're getting something nice. But have we finished the video? No. Where the guests mean a nice experience, but without the actual interaction with humans.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here we are. For some reason, my Facebook was showing me that the video has ended. Other foraging toys might be. Sorry, I'm going. This is me.
Yep. All right, are we ready for another question, or did we have anything else to say about any of these things that we were talking about? No. Okay, I'm going to pick one of these questions.
Oh, we've got a another question from Faith.
Never mind.
Yeah. What's your best success story working with a shy, fearful cat?
Oh God. I need to preface this with, this is going to be about a cat that I lost recently. So please forgive me if I get a little, emotional. When I started working, volunteering at that rescue, actually, as a really dedicated volunteer in 2010, there was this little gray kitten, teenage kitten, named Tuffy, quote unquote Tuffy. And when I started noticing her, she would run. This was, I need to preface this, that this rescue had a group rooms, so it was basically a large space with lots of cats in it. It wasn't, cats weren't in cages. So when I started noticing her, I'd see her, and she would see me see her. And as soon as she saw me seeing her and that I was approaching, she would take off. And I spent a few months, like I got down on my knees and went like inch by inch to try to approach her, and until she let me actually touch her for the first time, and then she let me pet her, and then she started purring. And we made very slow progress. Unfortunately, she was still very scared of strangers, so she kept hiding. And I eventually ended up being able to adopt her in 2014. She'd been there her whole life, mostly. And she, when we brought her home, she was sick and had to go to the vet and had to get meds, and it was awful. I have a scar on my hand from her because we tried to get her into a carrier and she would totally freak out. Totally freak out. And, because she was sick, we didn't have time to, like, let her settle in. Yeah. And adjust. And she eventually, it took a long time, but she started sleeping in our bed with us. She started letting us pick her up, purring. She, when we first got her, she had a very good appetite, which saved her life so many times. She was impossible to medicate except if we could get her to eat her meds for a long time. But she was very dedicated to her pill treat sandwiches, very dedicated to them. But she progressed so much from that little kitten that I couldn't even approach. When she actually passed, she had become diabetic and was getting insulin injections twice a day, which is obviously a very hands-on thing. It's not as scary as people think it is, but it does, you do have to, pinch the back of their neck and give an injection, a small needle, but the cats still feel it. She even had to get her blood glucose, checked a few times by us at home. She got fluid therapy at one point. She ended up passing from liver cancer. That was, ended up being a pretty fast thing, but just from that, that's probably my biggest success story because she did a complete 360. She was also fairly friendly with guests by that point too. Like if there were people she knew, she would come up and say hi. And...
Oh, that's pretty cool. That's cool. Laura?
I have two that stick out. One's really quick. I have a couple of feral cats that I take care of in my yard, and I think that my favorite moment was I had been feeding one of my cats Mustache for about 2 years. And the day that he let me pet him, being completely feral, was really big. And he started meowing at me. And now I joke at him all the time because he cannot get enough pets now. I go out there to feed him and he's like, pet me. But I'm like, what? Nobody else has petted you all day? And I'm like, it's our little joke because no one else can touch him except for me. And I have a very, very, very fearful cat. She's got noise phobia. She's got generalized anxiety. She's got all of stranger danger. She's got all the things. And it started, you know, it started when she hit about 3 years old. So she was not great. She was not ever feral. She was raised in my house with me for the first 3 years. It's all a genetic thing when she hit that social maturity age. And last year at Halloween, she hid under the bed the entire evening, and did not come out. And this Halloween, we've been doing a lot of work and getting her on some good meds. She sat in the cat tree next to the door the whole night when there were trick-or-treaters in and out and kids screaming. And we tried really, really hard to minimize the knocking on the door. Like, we have a lot of trick-or-treaters in my neighborhood, like a lot. And we would try to jump up and go get to them before they would knock, because knocking is still a big trigger for her. But she did so good. So that's a different kind of fearful cat than some of the other ones we've been talking about. But it's been a really hard journey, because she was at the point last year where she was so afraid of thunderstorms that she would have panic attacks when it started raining. Because she learned that rain sometimes means a thunderstorm would happen. So she started full-blown panicking when it rained. And it's raining right now, and she's sitting here on the couch with me hanging out. So,
oh,
yeah.
Yeah, that's great. That's awesome.
What about you, Joe?
I think my favorite feral cat story or fraidy cat story is my client's Key, and it was, I think they were like my first cat clients ever. Mm-hmm. And they adopted this cat from a local shelter, and they knew that she was shy. But she was, when they brought her home, she just went and she hid under a desk behind some cables, and that's where she was. And that's where she lived. And they tried getting, you know, people like tried reaching into her, get her out. She scratched them pretty badly. And they are so dedicated. They just basically, this is kind of a, older retired, and they were so dedicated, and we've made changes. We've created a safe space for her, for the Key, so she could have safe space. And we instituted like regular short visits in her room, so she knew when people were coming in, leaving some treats, going out. Right. So she was basically, she could not even be approached. But when she was in the room, she was just hiding. She was not visible. But just by creating this, walk into the room, leave a really good treat, walk out, and do it on a very kind of regular schedule, she started anticipating that, and she started coming out. So from a cat that was basically like a ghost cat that they've never seen, suddenly she knew, oh, this is my time for the treat, time for the food. And she started coming out, and she started approaching them. So it was really, really beautiful, because it's one thing when we work with cats and we kind of know, but being able to teach the clients how to deal with it. And then, you know, like for them, it was very emotional too. And, you know, the first time when she started coming out of her room, because she was also afraid to come out of her room after that, when she was just kind of hanging out there, when they were just sitting in the room reading and she was hanging out, they were elated. So I think also kind of the expectations, where the expectations were kind of at the right place. And now she's doing great. They even managed to take her to the vet. They do some targeting with her. She comes and she wraps against her dad's legs to get food. So all good. So that's my shy kitty, fearful kitty. We have another question on Facebook. And so the question is, this is Rachel, the same viewer, that asked us earlier about her 5-month-old kitty. And she's saying, but that kitty is also very fearful at the vet. And she was great at first. After a recent vet visit, she is now hissing and growling at the vet office and at me in the exam room. Any suggestions or successful way to make this less stressful? The vet's only suggestion is drugs. I mean, drugs are not bad.
Yeah.
Drugs are probably a good suggestion on top of some other things, but we can do.
I think the first thing is that I would look at is what made the vet visit bad? That's my first question. Was it just something inevitable, that she just had a scary experience? She was afraid of all the dogs barking or something like that? Or was it that the vet scruffed her and grabbed her and dragged her out of the carrier and then held her down on the table while she screamed? Because that happens in a lot of vet clinics. Just so you know, that's not okay if that's how your vet treats your cat. So the first thing I would do is look at what education, what credentials does your vet have? And I usually tell my clients to either look for a practice that is certified cat friendly, or that is fear-free certified, or preferably both. The practice where I take my cats is a gold certified cat-friendly practice and a fear-free certified practice, which not just the vet is fear-free, the entire practice is fear-free, which is a pretty prestigious designation. So that in itself, if you can find a vet that has one or both of those things, means that they have specific training in making your cat's vet visit less stressful. So even if you do nothing, the vet will have been trained to do something. So that's a good first start. As far as everything else, I mean, I answered half the question. Does anyone else want to chime in, or I can keep talking? I don't want to steal the show.
I was just going to chime in that, you know, gabapentin or whatever meds the vet recommended sometimes can be helpful too. There's some over-the-counter calming supplements that I've had good luck with. My former feral cats, all of them still need gabapentin to go to the vet visits because there's just too much that's scary for them there. The car is scary. If your kitten used to be a former feral outside, cars are scary. That's an instinctive thing. That's pretty difficult for a former outside cat to get past. So using meds while you do what Laura suggested, as, you know, looking at your vet's credentials, asking why was that a bad visit, maybe looking into finding a fear-free or cat-friendly practice. While you're doing all those things, using meds in the meantime is not necessarily the wrong choice. And it can make, you know, it can help, you know, if your cat had a bad experience and then you've done all the right things and they're even going to a new vet, the meds can help make it more likely to be successful.
Yeah.
Sonny takes gabapentin to go to the vet, and he will sit on anyone's lap ever. He is not afraid of anything except going to the vet.
Oh, the other suggestion I was going to, Laura's probably going to chime in more about this too. Like, carrier training could be really helpful. Leaving your carrier out, making it a place where they can chill and hang out and not just like the scary thing that takes them to the scary place. I think that's an important thing too. And especially with a kitten, you can, you know, put catnip in it, put toys in it, do all sorts of things to make the carrier a fun thing so that they're not starting that whole vet process with something so negative.
Yeah, I was going to jump in with the carrier training there before.
There's a lot of things you can do.
Yeah, and oh man, I had something in my brain, but it's gone now.
I recently had a client, I'll just jump in while you're thinking.
Yeah.
I recently had a client, this is another one of my favorite fearful cat stories, where they had been trying for over a year to take their cat to the vet. They had, I think, scheduled like 8 different appointments and missed all of them because they could not get the cat in the carrier. And they were so dedicated. They started doing training every day. It took 3 or 4 months. And the cat had a tumor, a visible tumor sticking out of her back end. So like she needed to go to the vet. But they did medication training. So on the day that they finally made another appointment, she opened her mouth voluntarily and they just popped the gabapentin right in. And then we had mat trained her. So she learned to sit on a mat and then we moved the mat in the carrier and she walked right in the carrier voluntarily. And then when they got to the vet, they were able to coach their vet. They said the carrier is her safe space. The mat is her safe space. And they just unzipped the top of the carrier and did her whole exam while she was in her safe space. So we totally transformed that carrier from something that she was trying to, like, she was forced inside and it was scary. And we bought a new carrier. So we threw away the old carrier that she had the bad feelings about and got a totally different one. And so she was way, way calmer at the vet because we did that. And they had been trying, they tried to take her 8 separate times before that. So, and these people were just average people off the street that had never trained a cat before and never done anything. And now they are working with me. They have to take the cat now to a specialist who is an hour away. So we're working on more specific on car rides and stuff. But like all of this stuff is pretty doable for even the average person.
Yeah. Yeah, I cannot stress enough the carrier training. And I guess the other thing, because we talked about meds, but also medication training, and this is something that you can start training and working on before you have to give meds, especially important for shy and fearful cats that you cannot handle and you cannot just, you know, pop the pill in their mouth with a pill popper, for example. So when we talk about, yeah, let's give our cats medication for stress and anxiety, and then we don't also want to create distress and anxiety while we are feeding them the pills.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that I want I wanted to mention before I had a blank brain. You say that she was great at the vets at first. Sometimes we mistake animals that are frozen in fear and that are just not reacting for animals that are doing fine.
Mm-hmm.
And that second visit, and I would say that if that was the case and she was just frozen in fear of that first that visit, then the fact that she was hissing and growling at the second visit is actually pretty positive, because mm-hmm. she meant that she was feeling a little bit better, a little bit more confident, that she was feeling that she could actually express her feelings, that she felt, you know, you were safe enough for her to say that.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, kind of, if you think back and remember, what did she look like when she went to the vet the first time? Was she just kind of like, just do whatever and I'm just going to pretend that nothing, like I'm not here, even here, and I'm just going to get out and hopefully alive?
Yeah, good point.
Yeah. All right, we've got another question. We have quite a lot of questions on Facebook today, which is cool. I love that. What advice would you give to someone that just adopted a kitten to hopefully prevent shy, fearful behavior?
Give them a safe space in your house, first mm-hmm. of all. Like, when you bring them home, make sure that they have a room to themselves that has everything they need in it: food, water, toys, litter, and let them chill, you know, let them call the shots. Some people just make a mistake of taking a cat home, and if they don't have any other animals, they just let the cat out in the house, and that's a little overwhelming. So start the cat with a small space. That's
yeah. And I think there's a lot, and I'm sure this is probably worse with puppies, but I don't work with puppies, where there's a lot of emphasis on socialization and expose them to as many things as possible and take them everywhere and do all the things. Like, you hear that more about puppies, but there's a big difference between flooding and desensitization and socialization. So you don't want to like put the kitten in a backpack and take it to PetSmart and then take it to brunch and then take it to the movies and then, you know, like expose it to 50 kids and do all those things. Like, but yeah, if you have a friend that has a calm dog that, you know, is safe around cats, have the dog come over for a visit and separate them with a baby gate and have the dog on a leash and let the kitten choose if they want to come over and say hi to the dog. Like, that's great. That way, when they go to the vet and they smell a dog at the vet, they will have seen a dog before. And at least, you know, they will have smelled it and hopefully will generalize that it's a little bit of a safer situation. Or like, kid, have a kid, some a friend with a kid come over. And like, you do things in a gradual way where the kitten still has a lot of choices and they can investigate or they can not. But I think the key is, and this is why we have seen so many behavior issues come up from kittens and puppies that were adopted during COVID, is that they weren't exposed to anything. So now they're fearful of everything because they were never given the chance to meet a stranger when they were young. So I would say, obviously, being careful about how you do it, making sure that you're reading the kitten's body language, making sure that they feel safe the entire time. Get them exposed to things, sounds, different kinds of people, different kinds of animals, all the different things. Because I think the more that they become comfortable with during that socialization period, the more confident cats they will be later on. It doesn't always work that way, because like I said, I got my cat Bean when she was about 6 weeks. We pulled her from a shelter at that age. And she just decided she was going to be super fearful when she hit 3 years old. So sometimes you can't prevent it.
Yeah.
And me being a professional who other people pay me to work with their fearful cats, have a cat turn out like she did. Yeah, I think it's important to mention it because it's okay. Sometimes you do everything right and you still end up with a fearful cat.
Yeah. I think a lot of kind of when you talked about socialization and kind of making sure that we are not flooding and we're not putting our animals in situations that they cannot handle. Learn body language, because then you can be, I mean, this is like a foundation of anything we can do. But I think it's especially important if you are dealing with a shy and fearful cat. So you can recognize for small signs of being stressed or uncomfortable before the cat gets into the hissing, growling,
mm-hmm.
you know, a big display. So learn to listen to them when they are whispering or talking quietly so they don't ever have to shout at you.
And I think Laura kind of hinted at a really good point here, that even if you do everything right, your cat is still going to be your cat. There are some, you know, there are some behaviors that can be modified, but your cat's personality is going to be your cat's personality. And I think part of it is learning who your cat is, what their limits are. You know, every cat has slightly different limits of what they can handle, and respecting your cat for the unique individual that your cat is, I think is kind of important. And
yeah,
sometimes people in shelters, especially, they'll come out like, I want the most cuddly cat. And not every cat's cuddly. Not every cat's friendly. Not every cat wants people to, you know, be friends with it. Some cats, you know, their form of showing attention is rubbing against you. And that is, I adore you, but they don't want you to pet them necessarily. Or they and some cats.
Sunny.
Right. Some cats are sunny.
It was just melting into my body at all times. Yeah. And I see, this is not related, but I think there's a big emphasis right now. There's a lot of people who are into the whole adventure cats thing. And you cannot grab any kitten and have them be comfortable with that. No matter how much socialization you do, you could still have a cat that just does not want to go on adventures, which is not, it's not super relevant. I'm not going to get on the soapbox, but I think there's always, it's the nature versus nurture. So there's, even if, you know, you can do everything right, but it's all about the whole time you're giving your cat's choice, you're respecting their body language, you're listening to them when they're whispering and all of that. I think if there's one lesson out there when it comes to fearful cats, it's providing them with choices and control over interactions is the probably most cat behavior consultants would agree with me that that is number one, the most important thing to remember.
Yeah. All right, one more question. Any thoughts or experience with clicker training to help with fear?
Ooh, I just talked about the PPG conference. So if you're a PPG member and you want to buy the recording of the conference, you can hear me talk about it. And also Tabitha Cusera talked about it a lot. So there's several talks on how to do this with fearful cats. That's my disclaimer. If someone else wants to talk about it, they can.
No, go ahead.
When I gave my talk at the PPG conference, I was talking about, you know, specifically using clicker training to work with shy, fearful cats. I believe I talked about using start buttons with these cats, where essentially you're teaching the cat that if they do a certain behavior, that means that it is okay to move forward. So I kind of loop those into two things. I start with targeting almost always, unless they're very, very, very fearful and they're not going to target. And if you put your finger, you put a target stick in their face, they're going to be more scared. It might start with capturing there, but I have many videos of me using targeting with fearful cats. One of the videos I shared with the people in my skill lab at the conference was me working with a fearful kitten. She was hiding kind of behind I don't know what she was hiding behind, like a box or something. And we started doing targeting and she wasn't playing with the toy. I was using a toy as a reinforcer. She was just watching it. But every time I offered her the target again to start the toy back up, she would always touch it every single time. And then it was about a 2 or 3 minute video. And at the end of the video, she had come all the way out from hiding and was batting at the toy over that very, very short period of time. So it was just giving her, she was in a shelter, giving her the opportunity to have control over what happened to her in that moment was so empowering that she came completely out of hiding and started playing within 3 minutes. So you don't have to do targeting with that. You can do capturing, you can capture eye contact, you can capture forward movement. So forward movement is not getting up and walking all the way to you. Forward movement is leaning towards you, picking up a paw, shifting. You can capture, you know, those are probably the easiest, most basic things to do. But once the cat starts realizing that they are in control over, you know, if they get a treat or if they get a toy, you start to see them blossom, because especially in a shelter and even at home, like the reason that cats are fearful is because they feel like they don't have control. They don't have choices. They've been removed from whatever is familiar to them. They're put in an unfamiliar place. And it's the same thing with pattern games too, like T was talking about earlier. I also use a lot of pattern games with my fearful cats now, but the good old fashioned targeting and capturing are still great tools also. And yeah, I think that covers it.
I'd like to chime in actually, because I have a kind of unique clicker training story with fearful cats. So I started clicker training about a year and a half ago with my cat Zathras. My goal was to do some cooperative care stuff with him because he was horrific at the vets. Fine at home, but heaven forbid the vet try to get his blood. So I started doing clicker training with him. There's actually an article I wrote in the IABC Foundation Journal about this. You guys can look it up if you want. But unfortunately, Zathras passed due to cancer last fall, cancer, heart disease, etc. But it was interesting when I was clicker training Zathras, the other cats in the house would watch. And eventually what ended up happening is the other cats in the house wanted to participate because they were seeing Zathras getting treats. And one of those cats was Yato, who was feral when he showed up at my house in the backyard years ago. Decided eventually he did not want to stay outside and that he adored me. But he figured out he loves his target stick. That's his big fun game. And we, since then, we brought Inigo inside, who used to be outside with Yato. Inigo was an anxious mess when he came inside. I've talked about him already with pattern games. He would watch from the hallway when I was doing clicker training. And eventually he kind of walked up, and now like the whole group, my whole four cats, they all get clicker training every night. And it's interesting because they're definitely learning from each other. You know, Yato learned from Zathras, Ethel learned from Emily, and Inigo and Julian are now learning from Yato and Ethel. And it's nice to see. It can be very helpful if you have a friendly, non-fearful cat for the fearful cat to observe, you know, and see, okay, this cat's running up to a stranger and they're purring, they're happy, they're getting a treat. What? Okay, maybe I should watch this a little bit more and see what happens. Maybe this will happen again. Maybe this, you know, maybe this stranger is the only nice person in the world, you know. But it can be very helpful for fearful cats to just have the opportunity to observe unfearful cats and how they interact with people, especially.
That's something I used a lot when I was fostering more, is I would send in the helper cat. I have one cat, my cat Dragon. He's having a hard time right now. But anyway, he is one of those cats that loves every single other cat and will be friends with every single other cat. So I would just be like, all right, go in there and work your magic. And a lot of times, you have to have a very specific cat for this. Don't go trying this at home unless you have a magical unicorn like my cat Dragon. And you might, they do exist. They're a little bit more common than we probably think. But yeah, cats do learn from observation. That's been proven in research. So just observing that and how the other cats behave around people can definitely make a difference too.
I just wanted to point out one thing from a practical standpoint. When it comes to clicker training, fearful and shy cats, you might not be able to use the actual clicker. It might be a little bit too noisy. So kind of see where your kitty is. Kind of shy, fearful animals, sometimes I use a tongue click instead. It's much softer. Or you can just use, you know, it might not be as distinctive of a signal as a clicker is, but you can just say good. You know, just having a nice, calm, quiet verbal marker, it's the same principle, right? Or you can take your little clicker and wrap it in like a kitchen towel or just a towel or a piece of like your t-shirt. So when it does click, it's a much softer click. So this is just a practical standpoint when it comes to the markers.
Mm-hmm.
All
right.
I have dropped the link to T's article on her clicker training in Facebook in the comments.
All right. Do we have any final questions? We have about 5 or 7 minutes.
Have one comment. We only have one more new comment. Thank you. Thanks to all of you. I have used clicker training, go button, and pattern games to get my anxious feral kitten to be a confident, agility-loving girl.
Yay.
Yay. Thank you for sharing with us, Chris.
Can I add one quick thing about the clicker training before we wrap
yeah,
up?
Go ahead.
Actually, two quick things. Depending on your fearful cat's history, I do sometimes see that cats that have feral history, as in true feral history, are hesitant to eat in front of people. So that can be, just be aware that your fearful cat, if they have feral history, there might be, you might have to do other things before you get to clicker training. And the other important part of that is, if your fearful cat was a former feral, don't feed them from your hand with the treat. Put the treat on the floor, because you don't want them to start associating your fingers with food.
I think that's good advice for any cat. I always like people to feed the cat on the floor. That's just, and most cats are more comfortable eating food that way anyway.
Yeah.
Great. Well.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, T, for coming back. I know.
We currently don't have a December Chat and Chuckle scheduled yet. If anyone has any topics that they would like to hear about, I know we often have some of the same people that tune in every month, so feel free to make suggestions, because I'm going to need to find somebody to be our guest next month. But yeah, thank you, T. Thank you for volunteering to come out here and talk to us. I know we're pretty fun, so it's probably a pretty good experience.
You're very welcome. I want to end with one quick thought that not all fearful cats are feral. We've kind of used the term, both terms pretty, I know that all of us know the meanings and how we were using the term, but just for the listeners to just be aware, not all fearful cats are feral. So.
Yes.
Good. All right.
Thank you, Sunny.
Yeah, of course. Sunny's perfect.
All right.
We have an important announcement from Dr. Christina Spaulding and Science Matters Academy. Are you ready to join fellow training and behavior professionals for the first big one of 2024? The Unlocking Resilience course, which covers everything you need to know about the impacts of stress and how we can cultivate the development of resilience and well-being in our animals. It's 16 weeks of live sessions, lectures, discussions, interactive application activities, and assignments. And there's nothing like it out there. Visit sciencematterslc.com/unlockingresilience to learn more and register today. We're starting on February the 7th. So visit www.sciencematterslc.com/unlockingresilience.
If you're gonna teach me force free. People can be good and kind, and that's a great philosophy. I can flourish, I can learn if you'll just help me. Show me, guide me, be my friend and train me happy. I can be the best dog I can be if you believe in me. And if you're gonna teach me force free. If you're gonna teach me force.